This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politics.
Eita, compliments of the season. Happy New Year. Shalom. Whatever it is that you say at the beginning of a brand new season. Welcome to another season of Wow, What a Week. My name is Fresh. I'm a partner in rhyme, crime, grime, and politics. Botsang Muilwa is also here with me. This week, we unpack power, politics, and perception. From the ANC's birthday message and President Ramaphosa's visit to flood-hit Limpopo, to senior cops back on the hot seat at the ad hoc committee in Parliament. We ask hard questions about the matric class of 2025. Are we celebrating results or avoiding the real conversation about quality? Internationally, the US shakes global travel rules after Venezuela. South Africa calls for calm in Iran amid protests. And BRICS naval exercises spark both global tension and local debate. As always, we cut through the BS, connect the dots, and put power under the spotlight. This is Hashtag Politrix on Wow, What a Week. My name is Fresh, his name is Botsang, and you are welcome.
Good morning, Fresh.
Okrent.
Okrent, good morning to the followers and the viewers. What a lengthy introduction. It looks like you have been picking this up for the whole festive season. But yeah, compliments of the new season to you know, the followers and the viewers.
Sure.
Me and you, at least, we started working this Monday. Or was it last week?
We've been on radio since this Monday. Past Monday,
yeah.
12th, yes.
Okay. And we had a little time of partying as well.
Sure.
At least. But... Yeah, it's been. Look, I've not been resting. Trump kept me very busy over the festive season.
I think he has the entire world sitting at the edge of a cliff.
Yeah,
not sure if they should jump or if he should push us.
But yeah, but before we even go to the ANC, you know, I've been wanting to talk about this to the birthday of the ANC.
Yes,
I thought about it as I was driving to the studio this morning. That what is freedom? Are we really free as human beings? Whether it's political freedom or personal freedom. And one day we should have a discussion with maybe other people about freedom. And I've came to realize so late in my life that actually we're not free. There is nothing called freedom. And there is nothing called freedom, Fresh, when...
You're always beholden to something.
Yeah, yes, when you are told the government, the political system that we have created, even in church, you are told how to conduct yourself, how to sing. The government determines even what you eat, what will be in what you eat. You want to drive a car. They tell you, you will drive a car on these conditions. You must have a driver's license, drive this way. Somebody may say, it is to create order so that we are not in chaos.
I was going to say, unfortunately, it's either we have total freedom, and if we do, then we're going to have anarchy.
But this freedom that people may claim that South Africa fought, at least the apartheid, to be free from oppression. We are free from oppression, you know, it's oppressive laws. What difference were those laws, except being racial, to the laws we have today?
Okay.
Sparking people's minds.
So are you saying we are still fish in a bowl?
Yes.
It's just that in this bowl, at least, you don't have to explain why you're on the other side of the bowl.
Exactly. But it's something that was just crossing my mind. You know, if you are told go to school, you will study in English or in Afrikaans, you will do 7 subjects or 6 or a minimum 6, you have been controlled. I use the church as an example. I mean, some churches that are a traditional, like the ZCC church, you know, and the Zion Christian Church, I've learned actually now that it's actually called the Zion Church in Moria. It's at CM. There's also debates and politics there. Women sit on one side, walk on this side. They must walk behind men. Is that freedom?
It's socialization that we need in order for the not to be, to have us descend into chaos.
We need
some sort of socialization.
Why, when a woman sits next to a man or a man next to a woman, will it be chaos in church? What chaos can it create?
Well, I mean, based on what they believe, those people should be separated within that context of where they are.
That is oppression, because those who want other people to, they impose it on others. They are not free. The four of us.
But you opt in, though. You opt in. You can opt out if you want. So you are free to opt in.
Or to stay home.
You're free to opt out. You're free to... A lot of things we opt into, although many of them are us being socialized. That's why many say religion was merely opium for the masses.
Yeah.
And that in the bigger scheme of things, minus religion, the world would be chaos.
There's Madonna. You know, Madonna once said that. Remember, she's a born Italian. She said she was, how do they put it? She was brought up to be a nun.
She became
a rebel. And decided, and she was asked, is the religion or the Bible good? He said it was a good tool to maintain order.
Yes.
And it has done it to a certain extent. But anyway, let's get to our topics. No, it was just, my mind was just working wide.
Yes.
Yeah.
The June 8th statement was exactly a week ago.
Yes.
The ANC were in the Northwest, and they painted the Northwest black, green, and gold.
Was it painted black, green, and gold?
I'm sure it was, wasn't it?
No. Quite a number of people there said that was an absolute failure.
What determines failure? What is the numbers? Success?
Remember, the ANC is an organization that is mass-based, that's based on numbers. You move from filling the FNB stadium, which could take, when people are also on the ground, 120,000 capacity. If you fill the ground as well, you move from Moses Mabhida that could fill 100,000. For the last 7 years, they've been reducing and going to smaller stadiums. The Pokeng Stadium they were in or wherever takes about 20,000 people.
The Muruleng Stadium.
Muruleng, yes.
Yes.
20,000. And also taking into consideration those on the ground to 30,000. It's even less than half of what the ANC has been. It's numbers. It's a mass-based organization. It's numbers. That's one. Two, when you look at the boo-boos they did when they were there, one of them is trying to erect a tombstone for one of their founding figures, Nakamudi Rumulema. And then they don't go and consult with the family, you know, and all those things. But also, fresh from my side, the January 8th statement was rhetoric.
Okay.
When it was talking more about renewing the ANC. We have heard that before. We're talking about setting up the tone for the year, especially the local government elections here, and how the ANC should reinvent itself and do what they were supposed to do for people, correcting their wrongs. They've said it many times. For me, if I was planning to join the ANC or to support them, I am not convinced and I'm not inspired. And I've talked to so many people, including members of the ANC. They are uninspired by the January 8th celebrations.
What do you think it is about the Northwest and that relationship with the ANC that, I mean, is one of the strongholds in the country?
Yes.
And I think probably majority of the municipalities in the Northwest are in the hands of the ANC.
Oh, definitely.
One or two through a coalition. But generally, the Northwest is ANC country.
Yeah. It's...
But many are saying that it doesn't make sense because a lot of the Northwest is in disrepair.
Dilapidated.
Some roads are not even worth trying to drive on. The communities who've been complaining about, we don't have water. The people in Hammanskraal, not Hammanskraal, go Tutlung, I think.
Tutlung, yeah.
Go Brits, yeah. Who tell you about the water woes.
Yes.
The villages that have never had running water for years and years.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, some people look at Mafikeng, which is a historic town in this country, that the Sol Plaatje, one of the founding members of the ANC, is from Mafikeng. If I'm not mistaken, I think the house Sol Plaatje lived in is a, you know, what's it called? It's been declared a heritage site,
yes.
If I'm not mistaken. I mean, the town or city of Mafikeng is where the siege Mafikeng happened, where Baden-Powell started the Boy Scout movement. It's a worldwide movement, but it's rooted in Mafikeng. So given the history of Mafikeng, and you drive in Mafikeng, you're like, why does the city look like this? Why does this town look like this?
And that's exactly...
So can we discuss that relationship between the province doesn't look like it ought to, but they love the ANC.
Yes, but that is the culture of the supporters and the members of the ANC. If you look at the three provinces where the ANC score most, it's Limpopo, it's the Eastern Cape, and the Northwest. And they are the worst run, worst maintained, and worst governed provinces in the Republic. What does it say about where the ANC leads solely or in absolute majority? Because as you said, they're in absolute majority in those provinces. But it is also the problem of the residents of those provinces. One, to continue voting the same way when the, and your focus is on the Northwest, when the Northwest is being dilapidated. So the problem is the inhabitants of the province, because they keep on putting the same people over and over. In some years ago, around 2007, 2008, there were protests in the Northwest by ANC members saying they've put the ANC into power, but people who are conducting business in the Northwest with government are from other provinces, particularly Gauteng province, as well as Limpopo province. So they were protesting to say, we want to take care of our own province. Let's do our own work. And look what it has become. We can't blame anybody. The leaders of communities, municipalities, districts, and the province are ANC members. So now you ask yourself, how can you neglect your own house? And we can't blame the national government, because we are a provincial kind of state where the people that are elected in the Northwest are supposed to take care of the province or to develop the province. You know the advantage with Northwest? You know when you mentioned the Battle of Mahikeng, when you mentioned the history of the founder of the ANC, one of the former leaders, Nakamudiri Molema, where they had this whole thing. My own great-grandfather, Ramotsera, used to be a conduit for ANC guerrillas to go and live and train in Botswana. The former chief justice, the role he played, Jacob Zuma himself, while he was in the ANC, he was actually captured in the Northwest. There's even a monument that's been neglected now. Now you ask yourself, if these people have such a rich history...
Wasn't JZ captured? Was it Koster or Swartruggens?
Swartruggens.
Was it Swartruggens?
Just after Swartruggens.
Yes.
Yes. Now, when you look at such history and the wealth that the Northwest province possesses in terms of minerals, the wealth that Northwest has produced in terms of academics, then you ask yourself, what's wrong with these people? But there's also one thing that the Northwest province, or what we call Northwest today, had that other provinces did not have. The infrastructure that the former Botswana government, the homeland state, had left there. State of the art infrastructure. All he needed to do was to maintain the Northwest and infrastructure. Now it has absolutely collapsed. It's dilapidated. Everything from roads to schools, government buildings, nothing is working in the Northwest province. And fresh, like I said, you don't blame the national leadership of the ANC. You blame the voters of the ANC, the members of the ANC, the provincial leadership of the ANC in that province. Because if I'm the premier on NEC of roads, where do I drive? Where do I live? And you are even failing people. By the way, Brads or Mutukun, the areas, it was one of the developed cities or towns. It is not to say they did not have supply of water like other rural areas that did not have direct water supply. They had the supplies, the taps have dried because the infrastructure of water was not upgraded. Mututung Kekasi, you know, it's a township and it had the infrastructure, it had water. Now you have taken everything away from people and you can't even maintain what they had. The problem is the voters. The voters who are going to local government elections, they must start thinking. They must start thinking this thing of loyalty. I mean, for me, it will not work.
What do you say to people who say a part of the disrepair, especially Mafikeng le Mabatho, is almost to punish Batho ba
Mangope? Well, look, at the beginning, I thought so. It started with Popo Molefe, the first premier of the Northwest. I know because my family was affected directly by that. You know, then came Thandi Modise, and they're all children of the Northwest. And they did that to punish anything that was associated with the late Kosimanyane Mangope. And I also think, you know, they had a good leader in the ANC in the name of Oliver Reginald Tambo, who used to say, not everything about the apartheid regime is bad. Let us not go there and destroy everything that the apartheid has done. Let us take, maintain, and keep. But also fresh. Remember, I once had an argument that I don't know who said the white people and the apartheid people built this country when it was actually built by black people's labor. Mm. A forced black people's labor, you understand?
Yeah.
So we should have taken pride of what we inherited.
Yes.
And we have failed to.
And even try to replicate it in other areas.
Yes, and replicate it in other areas. I mean, we had people like Whitney Houston, Jonathan Butler, international artists, flying from the U.S., coming to the Mabatua, what do you call it?
To the pop podcasting studios
to record some of the songs and albums that people dance for. They don't know that they were recorded in the Northwest Province in South Africa because we had, as a nation, a state-of-the-art broadcasting. We should have just improved it over the years with technology. What happened?
You know, for me, one thing I wish that had been replicated across every municipality is the Mabana Cultural Center.
My brother.
Where talent is nurtured from an early age.
Yes.
I remember in 1991, visiting Mabatu.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine, he went to school at the international school of Bophuthatswana at the time. And we went to Mabana because his sister was doing ballet there.
Yes.
And it was incredible to see how many young kids were there nurturing that talent and being kept off the street. Many of them, you know, carried on, you know, to forge incredible talents.
Yeah.
Whether you're talking at Teboho Kobokwe, Tasman, the producer.
Yes.
He's a gymnast. Tasman is a gymnast.
A lot of and players.
Exactly. And it's sad that we couldn't replicate a Mabana.
Let me tell you, us who were called South Africans, who were living in the central government, the former Transvaal, which is Gauteng today, you know how much it was a dream for us to be able to go to Mabatu Cultural Center and learn that. We had wished we could have that.
Yes.
The apartheid government did not provide that for us, but Mangope regime provided them to the people of Bophuthatswana, and we destroyed it. But also, you know, still on the January 8th statement and the ANC challenges and problems. Let me, yesterday I had a discussion with some guys, and they were like, you are always negative. President Ramaphosa on Friday visited, the floods. You remember the country has been flooded, especially Mpumalanga and Limpopo provinces. Some borders had to be closed, people died, and school hasn't resumed in some schools in Mpumalanga and Limpopo because of floods. And President Ramaphosa had visited the place. Now, I stood up and I said, but why? Why react?
Mm.
There's floods, it's natural. You don't blame the ANC for the floods, okay? And somebody said to me, but sir, we hope you won't blame the ANC for that. I said, I'm blaming them. I'm not blaming them for the heavy rains. I'm blaming them for not developing infrastructure that would have controlled and or contained the floods.
But
you know, you can't plan for a disaster.
Mm.
You can't say the disaster of this magnitude is going to happen in 2026. You can't. We don't know. But if you have infrastructure, even in Gauteng, the drainage system is clean. The water from floods will move. It will have minimized. I don't say it will stop the floods. But if you had developed infrastructure, if you have built schools advised by engineers in areas, what do you call low-lying areas, why would you build a school in a low-lying area when you know that there's Limpopo River crossing there in case there's floods? Look, I'm not a scientist. I'm simply saying risk management, risk analysis. I will not. I know nothing about science and building. But I will not go and build a school next to a river and low-lying, knowing that we are a very heavy rainfall country. So the day there's heavy rainfalls, that school will be flooded. It doesn't need a rocket scientist to be a thinker.
Yes.
And then it needs preparations. And again, he went to Hammond's Crown when there was a water crisis 2 years back.
Mm.
Until today, the President of the Republic gave orders to ANC leaders in Hammond's Crown. Until today, the people of Hammond's Crown still don't have clean water running efficiently. Mm. He's now there going to assess. He's going to give good marching orders. I can tell you, to the MEC of education, infrastructure, do this, build bridges, move the schools, what. We'll be sitting here in 2029. Mm. That would have not happened.
And not that I'm trying to defend anything, but in 100 years of rainfall in that area, there's never been anything like this.
Yes.
So there's only so much they could have done to prepare for it. And I think outside of the was it orange alerts?
Yes.
That were given for people to...
Yellow and orange, yeah.
Yes. Outside of that, what else could have one done? I don't think anything you could have done could have prepared them for that amount of water.
Yes.
10 meters of water in some areas.
I agree fully. But I'm saying, knowing that we are a heavy rainfall country, and South Africa is in the forefront of the world talking about global warming. Why are we talking at BRICS, at the UN, about global warming? We know what it's going to cause. We have known. That's why we are campaigning about cleaning the environment and putting the environment. Why are we campaigning? Why are we supporting those moves? You understand? It is because we know the damage it will do. The polar ice or polar whatever is melting. It's going to cause problems for the low-lying countries of the south. Mm. We know. What did we do after knowing?
Mm.
I don't blame them for the heavy rainfalls and all those things. For example, you know, afresh, I was in the transport family or industry for 13 years. Year in, year out, we are talking about road fatalities. Now they've decreased, I'm told, 5%. By the way, you know how many people died, and it's a decrease. Yes, we clap hands, people behaved, but change the strategies, enforce the law.
So
change the strategy. If you do one thing 10 times and it still doesn't work, you can't keep on doing the same thing. Mm. And why are people being stubborn and rigid to change? And that's the challenge we are faced with. And I'm not anywhere blaming the ANC. I'm saying they must sometimes think outside the box. Unfortunately, they will never be the government again, in my view. They will be part of the government moving forward. But whoever is coming in must not be diluted into that mentality and thinking of the African National Congress. Can those political parties that are joining government start to think differently,
yes,
and do things differently and do things for the people that have put them into power where the ANC has failed? People of the Eastern Cape, people of Limpopo, and people of the Northwest Province, the ANC has failed them, or they have failed themselves by repeatedly putting ANC into absolute majority in those provinces. And those are the three most impoverished, provinces in the country. Mm. I mean, what sense does it make? What explanation? I asked my brothers from the Eastern Cape who are all over Gauteng. I asked them, guys, why are you still having pit latrines? You are engineers, doctors, business people lying around Gauteng. What are you doing with the money? It's your own. It's your own villages. What are you doing for your own village? Mm. I've been in government projects and working for a private company. One of the things I did, Fresh, I didn't choose to go there. Mm. There was a project that I was running for a company, Mogale Solution Providers, for Department of Environmental Affairs, and it was tourism that time. You know where was the project? In Dinokana, Komuswegu, my home. I said I will manage that one to build a clinic and a cultural center called Dinokana.
Yes.
I didn't arrange the project to go there. I just found that the company I was working for was awarded that contract. I said that one, I will manage it myself. I used to travel to Dinokana, Komuswegu, every week to see to it that that project succeed, because of the pride I have for my home. You understand? Mm. Now, if we don't have pride for your own homes, I'm not living there. My great-grandparents and families, Borakai, they are living in Kodinukan. But I took pride to say, Botsang, you are in an influential position. You are in a position to can make sure the project succeeds at your hometown. And it succeeded. Why can't other people do that for their home? You don't have to give money. You can influence the situation. People are in political positions in Gauteng, ministers, MECs, or in government, not in Gauteng. They come from all these rural areas. What have they done? I don't say they must steal money and channel it to their provinces. Well, actually, if they were stealing money, because they are anyway stealing, if they were stealing money and channeling it to develop the provinces, I wouldn't mind.
You know, I also want to challenge people that come from the different villages.
Mm-hmm.
That especially business people, corporate people, people who've done well, people who are successful, because there are a lot of very successful corporate and business people in this country from rural areas that do something about your area also. Government cannot do everything, and it will never be sustainable that government can fix every single issue. At some stage, little or now, you need to pull yourselves up by your bootstraps and say, how can I add value? I'll give you an example. I was visiting my parents at a home village 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And I found out that there was five families who don't have toilet facilities.
Yes.
I paid for five pit latrines. It's not preferred.
Yes.
But as like
absence of,
but I'd rather, as a child of that village, contribute five pit latrines just for the dignity of those five families.
Exactly.
So I think we all have responsibility to where we come from at a certain level. Even if it's uniform for one school child, sponsor a child, sponsor uniform for the soccer team, the netball team, get involved. Government are not going to fix every single thing.
Yeah.
It is impractical.
And it's up to the people. It's the people. I hope the people of Randfontein Mohlakeng will not ask me to go and fix their roads there. Anyway, I wish I could have more coffee. But anyway,
can we please have more coffee for Botsang? Please, can we have more coffee for Botsang? So, are we done with
January 8th statement? Yeah. We're going to see how the ANC is going to. I'm going to watch with, eagle's eyes. How the ANC is going to perform in the Northwest during these elections.
Do you think the numbers at the stadium will be a direct reflection of what the results may be end of this year?
Not necessarily only the numbers at the stadium.
Mm.
Because, rallies are not a true reflection of how political parties perform. But I'm following up on the number of dissatisfaction and happiness that has been happening and complaints coming out of the Northwest over the years and about basic service deliveries. You understand? Right now there was a mining problem, illegal mining problem. In the Northwest. And as always, the government reacted. So I think it's going to be...
I think it was in Bapong.
A number of issues that are going to influence how the people are going to vote. Mm. Other people talk easy. They say, but there's no alternative. Look, a number of political parties, Action SA is also fast growing in the Northwest. They are in about three coalitions there to can run the government. The EFF has been very stable in the Northwest. So I think it's going to be a number of factors that are going to influence the people. I just hope people do not stay away from voting, because that's the only tool we have as ordinary citizens these days.
Sure.
Is to vote, although also the media helps to be vocal and influence people. But I don't think the numbers at the stadium will be the sole factor to use to judge how the performance is going to be.
Now, while we're still at the ANC, can we just stop there by the DA just quickly?
Yes.
Dr. Dion George, 2 days ago on Wednesday, resigning from the Democratic Alliance, live on TV.
Yeah. I forgot about it.
I mean, he's been a part of the DA for almost 30 years.
Yeah.
And he feels that the DA has been captured by the ANC and that they're enjoying the trappings of being within government. Mm. What are your thoughts on how he resigned?
Mm.
What are your thoughts on the DA saying, is he gone? It's a pity, because we're in the middle of disciplinary. Now you can't get to the bottom of it. Because for me, it felt very dismissive that, fine, you can go.
It's
a pity because we're busy disciplining you.
Yeah, look, both him and the leader of the DA, John Steinhuisen, they were being charged for bringing the organization into disrepute because of their squabbles in a public space after the leader, Steinhuisen, had actually recommended to President Ramaphosa that he must remove Dr. Joe from the cabinet. Okay? I think he is behaving like a typical politician. I'll tell you why. Until 2 months back, he saw nothing wrong with the DA being in the GNU. And actually, yes, he was not just a member of the DA. He was a cabinet-saving member.
Exactly.
He saw nothing wrong.
The trappings of the ministerial handbook.
Yes, you understand? He didn't see anything wrong with the story. He never challenged them. He enjoyed them, like they all do. Mm. Everybody who's in the GNU, from Gaitin Mackenzie
to the communists,
to the communists, to the Africanists, to the PAC and all, they are on the gravy train. And I've said before, the soup is no longer just gravy, it's a thickened. Mm. And they're enjoying that. So he's a typical politician, and I think it's going to do a little bit of damage to the DA, because he's an influential leader of the DA. He's one of actually the founders of the Modern Day Democratic Alliance. And he's going to take a few people with. I don't know if he's leaving politics or he's going to join a rival. I wouldn't be surprised if he actually moves to the Action SA of Herman Mashaba or to Musi, one of the two. I wouldn't be surprised. And he may take a few people with.
There's your coffee.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, eh?
Yeah, because that's the conversation we're having on the radio show on Friday, that, I mean, outside of the DA, where else would he fit in? Because it's not going to happen with the ANC or the EFF or the MKP.
No, he's not going to go to the so-called center-left aligned political parties. I see him adding value to Action SA, depending on his relationship with Mr. Mashaba, or even to Bosa of Muslim. But remember also Bosa. Mm. Actually, now that Bosa and the good party of Patricia de Lille, and what is the other party on the tripartite new formed party now? The third one is from, I think, the current chairperson of SCOPA.
Oh, yes, ZB.
ZB?
Yes.
Maimane and Patricia de Lille. I actually see him fitting well there.
There, yes.
There, because these three political parties have come together to contest elections as one party. Mm. I see him fitting well there. But his statement to do it in public, you know, the way he did it on TV, I think he was ravishing the DA. He was just saying, DA, with me and you have said they've been very good in doing PR, you know, and publicity. But in this instance, he caused a damage the way he conducted himself in that resignation and media release. And the DA, I don't know if they were caught off guard to come and say, we're about to hold him to a disciplinary hearing, and he decided to leave. Let him go. It's okay. Now I want to see if the DA is going to continue to discipline their leader. Because it was about the two of them behaving like little boys. Mm. I want to see if they're going to do that. But I also think it is going to bring a little bit of instability in the DA. Remember the deputy minister who was fired by President Ramaphosa? Mm. The DA hasn't filled that post. So I'm expecting to see a little bit of squabbles and changes in the leadership of the DA.
Now, talking about how he feels the DA has been kept about the ANC. Mm. And looking at the opportunities the DA have had to jump ship and haven't.
Yes.
Surely they realize that their campaign for this coming election can only work best for them and be maximized with them being in the GNU.
Exactly.
Because the GNU then is almost free marketing and a free experience of, this is how we do things, go DA.
Exactly.
So watch how we operate at a ministerial level. So I almost feel like, you know what it feels like? It feels like staying with the abusive uncle, because you have a bigger goal.
Yes.
The bigger goal is, let me get an education. KJ.
The uncle is paying for education.
So that I can stand up on my,
and move. Yes.
That's what it feels like.
Yes.
That they're biting the bullet because they understand the value of being within the GNU, not for South Africa, for the bigger campaign.
No, for the bigger campaign. No, you nailed it. You nailed it. It's actually to their advantage for two reasons.
Mm.
The resources
of
being there. Mm. Two, they can, and they've been doing it indirectly using the government, the GNU platform, to market the successes of the DA. And they will own it as DA, not the government has succeeded. You understand? So there is a leverage there. And I think they are smart enough to stay for their own benefit, because they will stand up come local government elections or any elections and say, but look at what our ministers do. Me and you on the radio, I think it was Monday on the radio, or was it Thursday, I can't remember, I spoke about the plan that their leader, who's the Minister of Agriculture, had tabled regarding if AGOA cuts us completely out, where will we take our agricultural products? It tabled a plan. And let me tell you, should that work, our agricultural products go more now to East Asia and the Middle East? They are going to stand up and say, look at what Minister Steenhuisen has done for the people of South Africa in agriculture. Look at now, you know, that lady of IDC, I forgot her name, who resigned with immediate effect, the one who was caught up in the bribery scandal in media.
For allegedly bribing a journalist.
Yes. Look, she resigned, and look at how the leader of the DA, who is a minister of public works, stood up and said, even if she resigned, that's not how we do things in the DA.
Yes.
We are going to tell the hawks, the police and law enforcers to continue investigating and hunting that lady, resigning and running away. So for me, whether we like them or not, whether we agree with them or not, policy-wise, they are all politicians, but they are doing something good for themselves as a political party.
Absolutely. Should be interesting. Interesting.
It's going to be very interesting.
Interesting times that we are in.
And oh, and by the way, you mentioned the DA. Gaetan McKenzie did it as well in recent weeks. You know, the Patriotic Alliance, the political party, there are allegations or rumors that they are funded by one of their funders, is Israel government. And before they even got into government, before the 2024 elections, they were very vocal regarding Israel and how they regard Israel as a brother. They were very vocal.
In fact, even during this genocide that's happening now, I think there was a panel discussion somewhere, and they'd asked Minister McKenzie if he thought that there was a genocide happening.
Yes.
And he will never, ever be caught saying there's a genocide happening.
No, never. Now, you see, they're taking care of them. Recent, as I don't know whether it's last week or week before last, he called off, there's an event, I think it's in Paris or somewhere, where he called off.
In fact, that's what I wanted to talk to you about. It's called the Venice Biennale. It's almost like the World Cup of Arts.
Of art, yes.
Where different countries will nominate artists who do artworks that will go represent said country.
Yes.
And a panel of seasoned people within the art fraternity in South Africa then decided that Gabriel Goliath's Elegy artwork, which focuses on violence in Gaza and also, I think, in Sudan and South Africa, should go represent the country.
Yes.
And
Cape Flats, the South Sudan, and the Gaza.
But it was bigger than just Gaza.
I know.
It was about general violence and where we are right now. And the arts are supposed to reflect where we are.
Yes.
In the absence of historians, we have art.
And it's actually now.
We have art.
Yeah.
But we are told then that Minister McKenzie threatened to withdraw support, risking South Africa's participation because he deemed the artwork divisive. And then I think he allegedly said he will choose the artwork himself.
Himself, yeah.
Surely that should not be allowed.
It should never be allowed. That's because a South African campaign. But when I brought this up, I wanted to demonstrate how political parties are advancing. They are called because they believe, he believes that there's no genocide. I don't know whether it's a personal belief or it's a political belief.
He's a minister of the Republic of South Africa.
Yeah.
And South Africa's position is very clear when it comes to Gaza.
Yes.
But having said that, if artworks are going to reflect geopolitics, it is not for politicians to then dictate to the artists that I'm going to censor you because I don't like your
artwork. Because I don't like your artwork or because your artwork is talking or is reflecting a political line that I do not subscribe to.
Or that might upset my lobby.
My lobby, yeah, or my funders.
Whose pocket, who are in my pocket.
Yes. And that's really different. That's what political parties are doing. You see, the other problem is founding a GNU. And I always said there is no legal document that is guiding the current GNU.
Yes.
Unlike the previous GNU under Rolihlahla Mandela, because there was no constitution of the Republic of South Africa. So the GNU, that's why after the constitution, and this, again, what people are forgetting. The reason the government of national unity under Nelson Mandela, 1994 to 1996, succeeded is because there was an agreement.
Yes.
Whether we like that agreement or not. you know, the Hotezkir minute, or what do you call that, the sunset clauses, that agreement, yes. Quadessa agreement. Mm. Immediately when the Republic Constitution came into effect in 1996, that GNU collapsed. If you recall, that's when de Klerk resigned from the GNU, you understand, as the second deputy president of the country. You see how things were unfolding. Now, this GNU does not have a guiding document. Everybody does as they wish, forgetting that DA ministers traveled without permission.
Sure.
Geoff himself was carrying passports.
It's almost a free-for-all.
Yeah, it's free-for-all. And now, because the government was formed with favors, hey, I need you, bra, sure. I need you, we must keep Zuma and EFF out. Just because it was formed for that, it is very difficult for the ANC to call the DA out, for the DA to call the ANC out. Or to say, I don't want to be part of this nonsense. It's, you understand? And I think that's the challenge the country is being faced with, that we formed a government without a basic legal binding document that could be directing political office bearers to say, yes, the constitution is there, but for this special arrangement, I always say our GNU, it's like, you know, the BMW, Mercedes-Benz, and Audi, the gentleman's agreement to say we limit our vehicles to not go to more than, I think it was 200 or 250 kilometers per hour. Even if you build an Audi R8 or a Mercedes-Benz G63, it must not go between over 250,000 kilos. You know what happened? Audi were the first to break. They removed that chip because there was no agreement. It was a gentleman's agreement.
Sure.
Our GNU is operating.
Some other line.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's we are the German three. We are rivals, but let's be responsible, man. You can't come with a car that beats mine by speed.
In a situation like this, where a minister of arts and culture interferes in artistic freedom, artistic expression, even threatens to withhold
sponsorship,
taxpayers' money that is meant for the arts, not meant to govern the arts or to have a curatorial role, because you're not there to curate. That is why there's a panel of experts who decide this is the artwork that's going to represent the country at this World Cup of Art.
Yes.
When an artwork almost reflects the position of government when it comes to violence, GBV, and Gaza, and a minister decides to go rogue, does a president have a responsibility to speak up and comment, or must he stay out of it?
No, he can't stay out of it. The cabinet ministers are serving at the behest of the president of the country. The president is the chief custodian of the constitution of the country. And if any of his cabinet members conduct themselves outside the parameters of the constitution, the president must call them to order. I think it's just a fair thing to do. You can do and exercise your political authority, but do not interfere with the work. But not only the president, even that committee that said there to elect who will represent South Africa abroad. And I said, even the artists themselves, if they were organized, because if it's happening to art, tomorrow it will happen to rugby, to soccer, or to any other sporting code.
That was my next question. That is it because it's artists there with their paintings and their sculptures and everything else that the rest of entertainment industry are quiet?
Are quiet, yeah.
The sporting industry is quiet.
Exactly.
Because I almost feel like this is a big deal.
It's big, fresh.
But we are, to use a Jewish phrase, I think it's Yiddish, we're shtum.
And other people don't even know that. For example, you just educated
me. This went under the radar.
Yeah, you just educated me, you know, now the how mammoth that event is.
Yes.
You know, the way you explain it in simple ways. It's equivalent to the World Cup of sport. It's the World Cup of art.
And in fact, one of the beautiful things about, and you know, one of the reasons for me it's a big deal also, is you need to remember that pre-94, South African artists were not allowed to participate in Venice.
Yes.
They were never allowed to participate in Venice.
So,
and now that you're allowed to be a part of this this momentous event, that happens every 2 years. I think that's why it's called a biennale, because it's biannual. Then you have politicians getting involved.
Yeah, look, I like Gaten. Gaten is me, bro.
He's a cool dude.
I will call a spade a spade, and I'll call him to order when he doesn't. Suppressing artists because they differ with you on the concept of art. It is actually doing what the apartheid government was doing to our journalists. You can't write this story, photographers, you can't publish this.
There were songs that could not play on the radio.
Yeah. Songs that actually were not even political.
Sure.
As long as they were encouraging black people to rise and be themselves and honor their
culture. Or to look in the mirror and be proud.
Yes. I mean, he's doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I think some of his advisors or people around him should pull him to the side and say, Minister, that was not cool. Find a way of correcting it.
It's too late now because the submission date, I think, was the 7th.
So they didn't go through?
Missed the deadline.
Oh, no. I thought he would retract it.
He missed the deadline.
Ah, bro, that's sad.
In fact, to add fuel to the fire, the Goodman Gallery... very reputable gallery.
Yeah, I know.
On the continent.
Yes.
They've ended that 10-year relationship with the artist Gabriel Goliath shortly after his selection for this Venice Biennale, right? And the Goodman Gallery are citing a broader business restructure and market challenges. Do you believe that?
No. It's also one of the, capitalist pro-Israel action. That's why they are doing this. You know what this guy should do? He should take his artwork and look for investors in the Middle East and Asia. Simple as that. Leave them. Do it now. Don't withdraw. Don't apologize. Don't change your art of thinking. It's the sacrifice you do when you are taking a certain political position. Because... art is politics. It's talking to the realities of the world. You understand? They're good men. The gallery, and I know they're very big and they've been there for many years. I think they're doing what banks had done to other political parties, closing their bank accounts, freezing bank accounts of people who were supporting certain political party and all those things. Unfortunately, this is how the capitalist system works. They put their money where somebody will run with their narrative. You know, I was talking to Ramukhulu Akafresh about our show and showing her what we sent me that our followers are crying for more episodes per week. And you know what he said to me? He said, the reason you guys can't get a sponsor, not to say your content and your show is not good. Nobody's going to sponsor you because you are too rogue. You are damn good. You tell the truth and you don't have friends. So those with the purse, they want and they know, but they will not want to be associated with us. And I said, well, tough luck then, because I am not going to push a narrative that I know it's unethical, it's wrong for the people. You understand? Like, for example, we have criticized Keating and other political leaders that we like, we associate
with. It's not personal.
It's not personal.
It's not personal. I mean, Panyaza is one of my favorite politicians of all time.
Yes.
But if I feel that uflopile, I will say it with respect.
Say it out. And for me, actually, it's constructive criticism or exposure.
Sure.
You understand? And I think that's where we are.
Unfortunately, especially with politicians, politicians will tell you that there's no permanent enemy or friend in politics. But a lot of them are bangalangala.
It's okay.
They take things personally where it was not a personal attack. It was just, there's a lion there and there's
careful.
A lion. And you saw a lion, there's a lion. And we can all see the lion.
Exactly.
You know, in fact, according to the Daily Maverick, Minister McKenzie claimed he stopped Gabriel Goliath's work from being exhibited in Venice because it was backed by a foreign power pushing an agenda on Gaza.
Which foreign power?
Is what he said. Okay. That's the claim he made.
Anyway, fresh.
In fact, we're told he's referring to Qatar Museums, a cultural institution.
In Qatar.
And that they'd lost interest in purchasing a video recording of Elegy, Goliath's work that had to be performed in Venice, well before the minister sought to interfere in its content on the 22nd of December. So he's saying that because there was a foreign power influence. So it seems like we have people beholden to different lobbies at odds here.
Do you know,
allegedly,
do you know how many artists and artwork and sometimes music and classicals are being sponsored by the Goethe Institute from Germany?
Oh, yes.
In South Africa. Very big.
yeah,
on arts and music and all those things. And it's okay because it's from Germany. Mm. Now it's because it's from a Middle East country or a company that you think they are anti-Israel and you don't want to do it. It's sad. We are destroying our own people.
Mm. And we keep it moving. Where do you want to go to next? Yeah, there's a lot to discuss. You want to go to Parliament, ad hoc committee?
Actually, look, there's nothing more in the ad hoc committee.
Yeah.
The news for people should be knowing by now that the ad hoc committee has resumed on investigating the allegations of General Mkhwanazi. And the two people who were at the ad hoc committee this past week are the former, two senior top cops.
Mm.
One is the former acting, Ntate Phatlane, a former acting police commissioner.
Sure.
Who actually, for me, his biggest statement was
he was a general, ne?
He was a general, yes, General Phatlane. Mm. Actually, to be a police commissioner, you must be at a general level, sure, either a lieutenant general or major general, mm, at that level. So, for me, what was big that came out of General Phatlane's statement was that the problems of the police started when after Polokwane 2007 in the Jacob Zuma administration. So, mm, that's where problems started, where politicians who were deployed, they started interfering with the police work. And he said them as career policemen, they started worrying why the police, why the focus is on police. They even he was talking about how they placed their trusted people as ghost workers in the police force, mm, who were receiving salaries to come and spy politically on the police doing their work. And for me, that was a very catching statement. You know, then you ask yourself, why would politicians want to destabilize the police force of the country in them doing their duty?
Mm.
But then the second person was the head of crime intelligence, who was fired actually for doing his work by the current administration. And he also raised concerns on how he was refused to fill posts on at least four provinces until today. They don't have, what do you call it? They don't have crime intelligence commissioners or heads, mm, until today in four provinces. And he continued to, say they even have evidence as crime intelligence police of politicians who were receiving monies.
So
from alleged criminals or even convicted criminals. Mm. And it's not only South African police services, it's also members of the correctional service. You know, Fresh, when you follow, I forgot the gentleman who's sitting there now, the current head of crime intelligence. When you follow the story as he lays it out, you will see that actually there are people sitting in jail like we see in movies and running political offices and businesses and crime activities, mm, while they're sitting in prison. I thought those things happen in movies only. Mm. They've captured the politicians, they've captured business people, or they've got businesses, and they've captured the criminal industry platform.
Yeah, but remember what we said, that art often is a mirror of society,
mm,
and movies are art, so...
Yeah. So that's what the Madlanga, not the Madlanga Commission, the ad hoc committee has been doing.
Mm.
I haven't seen, maybe next week, you know, we will start seeing the movement in the committee. But as I've said on 938 Radio during the course of this week, there is also an outcry. One of the people who stood up and spoke is Advocate Sikakani, Musikakani, the senior counsel, to say that, you know, he said two big things in the last, the other week, he's more on the podcast, the other week he said South Africa needs a revolution, and it sends shockwaves in the country because people think revolution needs a war. This past week, he spoke about how the ad hoc committee had failed the people of South Africa. It has failed on its duties from the very beginning. You remember when this ad hoc committee started, I'm one of the people who stood up and said this ad hoc committee is more important than the Madlanga Commission because it's a creation of stature. It's a committee of government, of parliament that consists of three ordinary committees, and they've got the teeth, they've got the constitution backing them, they've got parliament backing them. They are in a better position to do so. But they all went into that committee as political parties, not as a committee, not as MPs. So everybody, they depending who's on the hot seat, every political party is pushing their agenda.
Yes.
You understand? And for me, they are failing us as a nation, that ad hoc committee, because they are more given powers by the law and the constitution of this country and the Parliamentary Act to can enforce investigate and make recommendations to courts, to police, to taxmen, to everybody to act. Mm. And no, they are just playing their political games. You look at Mekusela Diko when it's alleged corrupt person or police from the ANC, they are softer. You look at Julius when it's somebody that he likes, he's asking questions in a softer tone. People already started saying, oh, Julius has matured. He has toned down. He's no longer
a rebel rouser.
A rebel rouser. No. No, 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 that's not that. Mm. Julia's character will not change. It depends who was on that chair.
Oh, yeah.
Let them put somebody on that chair that Julius doesn't like, or a person who's anti-EFF. Mm. You will see the real Julius rising. Not only him, all of them.
Mm.
And as you could see controversies, guys, you could see their outside government. They want to nail these people who are linked to Minister Senzo Mkunu. So that's the challenge with the ad hoc committee. They are not representing the society or the nation. They are representing their political parties.
Mm.
And I've always said, political parties, when they employ people into political office, they must teach them basic education for politicians. You are there to serve the people.
So, no, but you're there to serve the party line.
You can serve
the party line.
But remember, what is the party line? The party line is the manifestos they sold the people
yes.
to who voted for them.
Mm.
Understand? Stick to the manifesto of their party. Be honest. Like, look, one of the people I like in politics is the ANC a leader, Ntuli, who campaigned to be the SG and lost.
Mm.
I like him, seasoned. You can see he is serving the people.
Mm.
And you look at Hlengwa of Inkatha Freedom Party. I like him. You can see people like the chairperson of this ad hoc committee. He's an ANC leader originally from Limpopo.
Mm.
You can see that it's not his thinking for the people and the country.
Mm.
People who say, I never praise the ANC.
So,
I've picked up people who are doing good for the country in terms of my observation.
In fact, while we're talking parliament and political parties, a lot has been happening at the MKP. Like the revolving door stays revolving, new positions, new people.
Ish.
Some are in, some are out. Can we keep up? And is this good for the party? Or is it essential that the party settles? And if it means moving people around, people must be moved around.
It is bad for the party on public perceptions,
the optics.
And the optics.
Yes.
It's very bad for the party to be changing members. But if you know the military strategy and how MKP was established, the command and control, it is essential. I like the way to use it. It's essential for them that if, instead of managing optics only, where they are dismally failing, Mkhonto is a part. They are dismally failing on optics, or they don't care.
Mm.
They are managing essential issues. They are saying, if this comes out, or if we let this happen and grow, we are still new, we are still toddlers. It will be very difficult to sort it out later. It will cause more damage if we don't sort it out immediately. And they add on immediate, which is not always a good strategy, but it's also not a bad thing. If you realize that something may cause problems, for example, they are paranoid. They believe that they are being infiltrated.
Do you blame them?
I don't, because politics have been...
I mean, they have the ANC paranoid, so I'm certain that the ANC might have moles on the other side too.
Exactly. And actually, remember, Mkhonto is ANC with other new people from outside. And the same leader of Mkhonto's party, Ntate Jacob Zuma, was responsible for doing those things inside the ANC, destroying COPE, destroying the EFF. He stood up, he said, no, this thing of and dealing with these people, planting people into the political parties and dismantling them.
That's my thing.
That's my thing. And we used to do it. And I'm not going to allow it to happen this side. And I think it's the strategy they are trying to use to settle the party. But one of the appointments they've made to make Ntate Brian Molefe to be the treasurer general, I think that's a good move.
Yes.
The man has never been a politician, ever, ever. I mean, I looked at him in parliament. He has his input and experience as a civil servant or an administrator. But I think it will do more to stabilize the budgets and the funds of Mkhonto. It's a good move. You understand? They should have done that before. But that's a good move. The move of Colleen Makubela, I don't know what informed it, but my baby was saying to me, because she is also an academic and a typical like manager, sitting there and managing politics inside parliament instead of the committees and the researchers to prepare for local government elections. That's the strategy they moved there. Not to say she was doing bad there, but she's more of a manager and administrator. Like I said, in the eyes of the people, if you don't have inside information, yes, and you don't know politics, you will not understand.
So you're saying they're fortifying where they need to fortify?
I think they're doing that. Mm. I think they're doing that. If what they are saying and displaying is true,
yeah.
If there's any other thing outside that, then they are playing with fire, because it will make, and people are already saying, but how can we trust them when they cannot manage their own administration?
Mm.
Their office is unstable. How can we trust them with our vote? Mm. Remember also, Nkonto Zise made a mistake at the beginning, after elections.
Sure.
They've got 45% of the vote in the province. They were sitting there still fighting the ANC and the media and whatnot. Instead of, they would have ran to the closest political party with 6%.
Yes.
In Qatar, or to the EFF and said, let's take this province.
Strike a deal.
Yeah, strike a deal. They wasted time and the ANC ran before them. Mm. And I think that should have been a wake-up call for them.
Surely it's not all lost that there's a party that's not afraid to move you if they're not happy with where you are. Because maybe that's the problem with a lot of political parties.
Yes.
That people sit and sit and sit. Whereas Ubaba is not afraid to say, okay, Botsang, you've been here for 6 weeks. Looks like Wahlola.
Yeah.
Or we made you. You're not coping. So we're going to move you.
Why?
It can't always be a bad thing.
I don't know. Why do we think change is a bad thing?
Yeah.
And let's take this and put it in the military, or put it in a private company, sure, a business.
Yes.
If your company employs me, that's why they give you probation.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Private companies, they don't give you 3 months anymore. We give you 1 month probation. You know, 1 month, show us you can do this. Mm. If you don't do it, let's go take you for training or move you somewhere.
Or look at it as a plumbing company would.
Yes.
I thought you had a plumber.
Yeah.
So come, there's pipes leaking.
Yes.
If tomorrow morning the pipe is still leaking,
yes,
someone else must come. Someone else must come.
Exactly my point. Why do you want me to keep you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Anyway, let's move to the class of 2025. 88% pass rate.
Yes.
The highest in the history of a new South Africa.
Yes.
Bravo. Unfortunately, lower down, the quality is not as great as it ought to be.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, the kids have kicked butt. The teachers have done what they need to do. The parents, the guardians have also shown up where they need to show up.
Mm.
But what is your overall thought of the 88% and the fact that we're not having as many kids as before doing mathematics?
Mm.
Or the fact that the boy child is being left behind? There are more girls completing metric than boys.
Yes. Well, congratulations to the class of 2025. I'm still a big critic of why results come out in January, you know, not in December after the exams, but that's government admin.
No, we don't want to ruin your Christmas.
Fresh. Actually, you are winning it for holding your hostage. Anyway, we have done well historically. Thumbs up from the minister to the kids or the students, as you said, with parents. But I want to look at it differently as well, Fresh.
Yes.
You know, I'm one of all the people, and this week I went to inform myself, what does this 30% pass rate and what, just to say a little bit of what I came across. And the minute, because the Minister of Basic Education was saying, we must start telling the truth, there's no 30% pass. It is not true.
Yes.
And they broke it down that, for example, your first language or your mother tongue, you must pass it, I think, about 60% or 40%. That's the first thing. Then there are four core subjects that you are doing at school. Let's say you are on the science stream. Then you need mathematics, physical science, and biology or anything else. You must pass them at 50%.
Mm.
And then your last subject, because you need minimum 6, then that one you can pass it at that 33.33%.
But that's what I've been saying on the radio, that my understanding of this thing is that it's not to say that if you get 33%, you've passed.
Yes.
It's just that at your worst,
yes,
even if you've passed the others,
yes,
at your worst, you can't be lower than 33%.
It can't be lower than...
That's my understanding of where the 33% comes from.
Now,
but I think it's been weaponized and mischievously used as, The pass rate is 33%.
But you know what's funny now?
Yes.
The Minister of Basic Education is a DA minister. Mm. The DA is them who has been in the forefront for all the years.
Yes.
About this 33%.
In fact, that's probably why Musi Maimane, because he still has a trace of blue blood in him. he's still fighting for this.
He's still fighting for that.
Yes.
And now I had to go and inform myself and have an understanding. My challenge is, that's fine. If you take 7 subjects, 2 can be 33. My challenge is, that is for what we call it university entrance. What do they call it these days? We used to call it university entrance, a bachelor's pass. We need it in our times. And this is where people are saying, don't bring your old school, the X1s, whatever they call it, the Gen 2 or Gen 1s. We, in order to get a metric entrance to university, the pass rate at that time was over 60% to be able to get the bachelor's entrance.
Yes.
We have reduced it to 50, basically, because you need to get 50%, what my mother would have said, to 50. We have dropped those percentages, and everybody agrees and concedes. Now, I ask academics and people who are in the education industry, is it right to drop the university entrance to an average? Not, they didn't say it's 50, to an average, because if you need 60 or 40% in one language, and then the core subject you are doing is 50%, is it preparing our students for university?
I'm not even worried about university. I'm worried about, are you preparing this matriculant for life?
Yes.
Because ultimately, you know, university is a privilege.
It's a truth, yes.
It's a privilege. You know, your human rights, unfortunately, at an education level, end in high school.
Yes.
At a basic level of education.
Exactly.
Everything beyond that is a privilege.
Yes.
And when you leave high school, are you prepared for life? Can you leave high school and go eke out some sort of living? If you can't, then the system is not right.
And for me, I think that's where the system is failing them. We are producing good numbers, 88%, clap hands. But are these kids who finish matric in 2025 ready for life after that? Those with families that are privileged, they can have money to take them to tertiary institutions. It's okay. But have you prepared them for life? And for me, when people say there's high unemployment, matriculants are not going to get a job. No, no, you don't pass matric to go and get a job, but to go and start living an adult life.
Yes.
Because on average, by the time you do matric, you are 18 years old. Mm. If you started school well and you did well. And that's when you become an adult. I understand when you say, has it prepared you for life?
Yes.
As an adult, where your rights to basic education ends there.
Yes, after that, you are literally on your own, and you're at the mercy of NSFAS, you're at the mercy of a corporate that might or might not sponsor you,
parents
who might not be able to afford to send you for further education.
And will you be able to face that hardship?
Yeah.
You understand? And that's the challenge. For me, when I question and or critique the matriculants we produce, I'm not talking about politics and the person. I'm saying, are we producing kids who are ready to run after matric? In my observation and in my view, we are not. That's why you have a lot of dropouts at tertiary. That's why you have a lot of people who feel like, I've got matric, I've worked hard, but I can't find a job. But are we preparing them psychologically and with those marks or those certificates to can be able to do any other thing except employment?
And in fact, we need to have the education so solid that, because I mean, if you look at, if 100 kids started grade R, probably just more than 50% of them will finish matric.
Yes, yes.
Where have that 50% gone? They're somewhere out there. And it goes back to the argument of, that is why you need a solid junior certificate.
Exactly.
That if you're going to drop out of grade 10, you're still solid enough to eke out some sort of living, to go to a TVET college or to go to a college that can help you still be of use to yourself and society.
Exactly, my brother. And also, even our TVET college or technical college, if they still exist, they must be designed in such a way that they will produce artisans who are in line with the needs of the country.
Yes.
What do we need? Which type of artisans do we need in South Africa? the basic and higher education and ministers or ministries, not the persons, the departments, must focus the curriculum and put more resources on artisans that the country needs.
Mm.
Me and you the other day, we spoke about plumbers that are foreign and, you know, and all those things. But without being negative, let me tell you a beautiful story with the viewers that I listened to on the radio during the other day. You know, there's a boy, a 31-year-old man.
Not a boy.
Why I keep on calling him a boy is because I'm inspired by the fact that he started teaching at age 22.
Okay.
He wanted to, he said he's from, his Lerato Polohwane, from Polohwane, from the Free State.
Mm.
He wanted to be a radiographer. He passed excellent in matric. Yes, back.
Radiography as in X-rays and stuff.
Yes.
Not radio.
Not radio. Are you called radiographers as well?
No, I'm kidding, man.
Okay. So he decided, because he was not accepted to do that course. He said it's a special course with limitations, and he was qualified. He said, no, I'm not going to sit here and waste a year. Let me go and do teaching, because I had passion. He went and he did teaching. He was a student in science. So he started teaching in the Free State, fresh. He's 31, started teaching at 22. For 9 years, he got 100% physical science pass rates. From age 22 to 31, all his classes, he moved with promotions. In one school, he entered the school in August. The pass rate of physical science was 70%. In 2 months, he took it to 100.
Yep.
They moved him to another school in the Free State. He finally did 40, took it to 100. He has served 5 schools. So he is the asset of the country or of the Free State province on physical science, 100%. You know,
yet we don't see his name in lights.
You know what he said to this man? He says, they ask him, how did you do this? How do you do this? Every year you achieve and you move. He said, it's not about promotion. It's about where I come from and the kind of kids I'm teaching. The majority in squatter camps.
Yes.
They come out of shacks. He says, government is not going to help.
Yes.
He said he even broke his car as he was driving to go and pick up these kids because they don't have money to come to classes.
Yes.
He said, parents cooperated. It's like, no, you're not going to sit in this shack and be depressed. I want you to get out of this shack permanently. You are going to go to class. You are going to pass physical. I'm coming here to pick you up. Mommy, daddy, I'm driving your child to school with my own car. He's coming to class 6 o'clock in the morning. Lunchtime, he sits with the students who are slow. They eat as they repeat. This is how he operated. Not being held by government, not being asked for extra funding, he is doing that. And he has achieved for 9 years 100% physical science pass rate. I wish I had met this boy when I was at school wanting to be a doctor. And the highest mark I got in mathematics was 4%.
He's a special talent.
I'm proud to have South Africans who are like that.
My worry is the boy child.
Yes.
That boys are being left behind. And you see it. I do a lot of talks at schools.
Okay.
And I remember I was at my dad's home village, Makaling, and I spoke to the kids there. And I think it's a thing, even when we were kids, where more often than not, the girls were always on the ball, always inspired, always ready. If we used to say about pap, but it's not even that. It was just confidence that a lot of boys don't have for a very long time. And I remember having a conversation with the kids, and I especially addressed the boys, that your goal is to pass so well, you only come back to this village to reinvest or to build a bigger house for your parents. That should be your goal. But I know for a fact that because generally boys are too cool to listen, half of you, by the end of this year when you finish, it was a junior high school.
Okay.
I'm probably going to see you at the bar.
Yeah.
In a year or two.
Yeah, cool.
Because you did not go where you need to go. And unfortunately, we can't leave it to the boys to inspire themselves. I think as a society, as a collective, we have a responsibility to make sure that as we're empowering girls, we're not leaving the boys behind.
I think it's not only empowering girls. They help the girl child campaign. It did well. It was good.
Yes.
But I think girls are more disciplined.
Yes.
I look at my three elder sons compared to my daughter, the last one. Mm. She's more disciplined. She likes school more. She talks more about school. My boys, when they were at primary age, they will talk more about cars and clothes and fashion and all that. And I look at the girls talking more about school. That's the first part, the discipline and the passion that girls have. But first, I've read years back, and I don't know if it's true, that science has proven that girls are more clever than us in maths and other things. That could also be a contributing factor. The discipline, and apparently they are more clever than us.
And precisely why we can't afford to have the boys left behind. There's, I don't know if you know Dr. Mzamo Masito.
No, I don't know.
I think he used to be head of marketing at Google Africa. I don't know if he's still at Google Africa. He just released a book a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
The book is called This Country Hates Our Boys. Boy, you are on your own. And he laments the fact that we can't afford to have boys left behind. I've told the story on the podcast before that my grandmother, may the good Lord bless her soul, when we were kids, she used to give us a lot of attention when we were kids.
Yeah.
And I remember one of my girl cousins asking, but why do you treat the boys differently? And my dude, this is 79, 80. But already she had tochi of... And I remember she said, the reason I treat the boys differently is because I need to make sure they're going to be fine one day. Because chances are you're going to be married off to another family.
Yeah.
So the likelihood that you are okay one day, is up here. If I neglect these boys, there's nothing more dangerous than a man that was a neglected boy.
Yeah.
So the very same people that were saying men are trash, there's GBV issues, chances are... it's the boy that was neglected that's now turned into this terrible man.
Yeah.
So we can't afford to leave boys behind. If it means we give them additional attention without excluding the girls, we need to do that.
Pardon me. Yeah.
Because the boys were ignoring, it's going to be the same guy who's holding you up and taking your car. That's snatching your phone. Except, that is stabbing you.
Yeah. And first, again, I've said, and I'm talking about Botswana growing up, Botswana getting married, Botswana having kids.
Yeah.
I think men are the weaker sex. We are maybe strong physically only. And stubbornness. But I think this story that women are the weaker sex, I don't know where does it come from, because...
from patriarchy and from men wanting to assert themselves.
To assert themselves,
And to subjugate women and other people.
Yeah, but again, you know, I think what we can do is to use platforms like this to encourage parents, to encourage the government and the people say, we need to work on improving our education system in order to produce better leaders of tomorrow. And this country has the resources. This country has potential. If we could become better students and better elders under the oppressive regime, racist regime system, there's nothing opposite. There's not Botswana's son who should worry about his Scorpion machine gun hidden somewhere while he's doing his matric. You understand? These kids are not going through that. It's a totally new generation. We must adapt to the changing circumstances without compromising the basics as a nation. Which topic I want us to talk about? I'm anxious to talk about it. But anyway.
But congratulations to the class of 2025. May your career dreams be simple because you're focused. And may you be hungry enough to, by hook or crook, by any means necessary, stay the course, be resolute, be steadfast, and get to where you need to get to. One thing I read about this the other day, about how one of the reasons a lot of us goals don't happen is because we're not realistic about breaking down what the goal is. And the fact that whatever your goal is, you need to reverse engineer it. So for instance, if your goal for 2026 is to get to 100 points of whatever, reverse engineer it. How many of that 100 do I need a month? How many do I need a week? How many do I need a day? And then start working backwards like that to keep your goals realistic. A lot of us look at the big goal, it looks daunting because you haven't reverse engineered it.
Yes.
So my advice to the kids and to anyone else maybe who's starting afresh is reverse engineer your goal and work on it incrementally, because the law of incremental gains is never wrong.
I never do New Year resolutions, but what I've taken when I was sitting at home was that a lot of followers were like, hey, Botsang, we'll develop Mkara wena. And I'm like, okay, going to the gym is not going to help me. I know. I don't like gym. I can't run these days. I'm heavy. I'll damage my knees. Okay, what do I do? Went to do a research. What could I do? Exercises for above 50s. I'm starting to see the results.
Sure.
So I'm starting small. I'm not rushing myself and being hard on myself anymore. And I check the goals gradually.
But it's working.
Thank you, my brother.
So
shout out. Will stop telling me that, hey, Muna, you are fat, you are overweight. Hey, this guy is body shaming me.
Trevor is actually my favorite Muzulu man. Because half okay, focal.
You know, one day
Trevor will tune you.
I used to be a photographer. He must teach me. One day I want to go behind the camera. Yeah. Trevor must come and sit here.
Sure.
And just talk. People will see what we go through, me and you.
Because we are running out of time, what's the one topic you said you want to make sure we don't leave out?
On the global issue, and we can combine the two. We can combine. I saw a lot of our followers were talking about Trump. Hey, guys, you are on holiday. Trump is taking Venezuela. We can combine that with the naval practice into because it has caused a storm domestically. Sure. And look, we know it's old news now. And maybe we will dwell into it in detail on the next episode. Why Trump abducted and kidnapped President Maduro of Venezuela and his wife. We'll go into the details then, but we are linking it to the global changes.
Okay.
It's all about money and the global changes, not only about oil. And people, you know, I've said it before, I don't know why is the world expecting Russia and China to stand up in arms and protect their friends like Iran, Venezuela, and South Africa in this instance. They will never do it. Russia and China are not going to send their warships and warplanes to protect any country. They may do what they've done for Iran before when Israel attacked Iran last year. They may send technology. They may send anti-missile technology and all those things that help Iran, but they're not going to send fighter jets and all that. It may lead to World War III. But now America aggression, it's intensifying. After, and you know what first worries me about the world, not President Trump. We all have agreed that President Trump is going to press a reset button. We all agreed that he looks cuckoo. Some people say he's sick in his head. But again, my problem is...
I think he has early onset of dementia. That's what I think.
Well, I mean,
when you listen to how his speech, he's starting to slur even. It's almost like he can't control the saliva in his mouth.
Yeah. That, we the world or the Americans have put that man,
sure,
knowing him, into that position.
Mm.
And what I admire, wrong or right, about Trump is he tells us what he's going to do. He stand up, he do it, even an evil thing, and he does it. And we get surprised. And that's where the problem is. I want us to reflect on other leaders of the world. When a man stands up, understand?
Does the world really have other leaders then? Because Trump is demonstrating that might is right.
Yes.
That if you don't have a jackboot, no one takes you seriously.
Mm.
That if you don't operate at a mafia level, nobody takes you seriously. Mm. If you're apologetic about your strength, nobody takes you seriously.
Yes.
And I think he's going to probably plunge the world into what is becoming a new world order. And possibly even a war. The fact that there's European troops on Greenland right now,
yes,
after talks with, I think, the Greenland foreign minister, or the Danish foreign minister.
The Danish foreign minister.
Was in the White House a couple of days ago, and they did not reach any sort of consensus, which they won't. Like, you can't just walk into my house and say, I like your fridge, it's mine.
Look, I always ask people, Trump is doing it. He's walking to people's houses and said, I'm taking the fridge. He walks into another person and said, I'm taking my wife.
While everyone else is watching.
While
everyone
else is watching. Now, why to the viewers, you are mentioning the foreign minister of Denmark. Quite a number of people I've realized on the discussions I'm having with people outside on social media and in person. People do not know that Greenland is part of
Denmark. Yes.
And being one of the federal, when they became a democracy from a monarchy to decide to have a prime minister, and they're still a queen of Denmark as the head of state, Greenland is part of Denmark. And Denmark is part of NATO, one of the technologically advanced in military countries, is part of NATO. America is part of NATO, and America wants to use its might to go and capture Denmark for military strategic position and resources.
No, but he's saying that if he doesn't do it, China and Russia might.
Yeah, but it's okay. Now, I'm saying this man told us he's going to do this.
Mm.
He told us he's going to occupy Canada. He told us 7 months bed fresh. We spoke about it in our last episode. That this man, our last episode, told us 7 months back that I'm sending CIA. He even exposed. First time in the history of the U.S., a president stands up off the world and says, I'm sending spies to another country, and they're going to focus on one era to go and monitor Maduro and his family members. I'm going to remove him out of power. Actually, I'm going to bring Maduro to the United States and prosecute him. He told us 7 months before. He has done it. Why are we surprised? Maduro, the president of Venezuela, was no longer even living in the presidential palace, was no longer living in one place. But Trump and his forces, they managed to go and abduct him. Mm. Obviously, they had
traitors. And murder his security detail from Cuba.
Yes.
The process.
Yes, you understand. Mm. Now, this man that the world has declared insane or sick or suffering from dementia, whatever, he reminds me of Hitler. Actually, I've heard people calling me a modern-day Hitler. He wants to be dead. People are forgetting that when Hitler was in prison, he wrote Mein Kampf.
Mm.
You understand? He told the world, when I live here, I'm going to start the war and capture the world. What did Hitler do? He did exactly the same. So when Trump was stretching in the world and other countries, what did the world do?
Mm.
What did we do as the world? And we can't... Now he's stretching to... Despite Greenland, there's another... attention is driving people to the naval exercise in South Africa. That is a BRICS naval exercise. Oh, let me not say a BRICS member states, naval exercise, Russia, China, Iran, and South Africa. We have naval exercises throughout the year.
Sure.
They have a problem with it because they say we are romancing and warming up to Iran as a state, but we are a sovereign state with a foreign policy. And they say it's an Islamic regime that is this week killing people in Iran. And
ICE agents are killing people in Ohio.
Yes.
No one is trying to invade America.
Exactly. Let me tell you, America was sponsoring and giving arms to and technology to Israel to murder the people of Palestine or the children of Palestine. South Africa still went on a naval exercise. You remember Operation Bright Star?
Yes.
In Ethiopia last year, Operation Bright Star 2025. It was a naval exercise that was hosted by Egypt, not Ethiopia. Egypt and the U.S. and other countries were invited to go and participate in that special operation exercise. South Africa was part of that. And it was okay that we participated in a military exercise with the murderers, America, who were killing people of Palestine while we went to the ICJ. Now, South Africa has an official diplomatic position to say we are a neutral state.
Mm.
We don't take sides.
Sure.
We are friends with everybody. I personally think it's a safe position, but it's not a good position.
What do you say to people who say, but we're guilty of a double standard? Because when America went into Venezuela for Maduro, we called them out and we even called for an emergency security council meeting.
Yes.
But when Russia went into Ukraine, we were...
No, but
until we were called out and then we said, no, we are...
Yeah, the timing is important.
Yeah.
I don't think South Africa was quiet or was permanently quiet when Russia did what they did in 2022. I think, as you say, when people called us out, we delayed. I think sure. President Ramaphosa, they delayed to react.
Mm.
But South Africa has maintained a neutral position throughout. Look, we have made a lot of international or diplomatic boo-boos and mistakes. We kept quiet when China... Actually, we sided with China when he oppressed the His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, to can visit Archbishop Desmond Tutu.
Yeah, wasn't his...
We refused him visa, yeah. You understand? Now, but focusing on naval exercises, we have done this exercise with almost every country that has a might of... Because we are privileged to have two oceans coming to us. This is not a military exercise. That's another thing that we must talk about. Naval exercise is a BRICS resolution to can combat and challenge what we call illicit trade using the sea.
Mm.
Understand? It's not just military. They are saying, in case the insurgents, what do you call these people who are mainly in the Somalia Canal?
The pirates.
Mm. The sea pirates hijack economic trade ships. BRICS is about trade and economics. Now, we know there's challenges in the sea. There's a BRICS resolution. informed by experts, a navy who are operating in the sea, to say, what if a ship carrying containers with economic goods gets hijacked by sea pirates or sea robbers? How are we going to react as member state? Now let's drill, let's practice.
So now they're going to argue that you need to play with Iran to do that.
Oh, who should we play with? Iran is a member, is a member of BRICS now.
Yeah, but we don't like them.
But if you don't like them, we don't also like Russia.
But we're bigger and stronger than you, so you need to do as we say.
Nah, French, let America decide to do what to do. They are not going to dictate to us as a nation which friends we should have. Understand? We are not going to.
But we're the world's police. How dare you?
I am friends with you, yet you are killing people in Palestine. Even when we became friends with them, when they were in Afghanistan, when they were in Iraq, when they were leading a war against Colonel Gaddafi in Libya, look what has happened. They're going to do the same with Venezuela. There is a protest in Iran today. The Iranian guard are killing Iranians who are protesting. And when they were asked, something has come out yesterday, when they were asked, why are you killing your own people who are protesting? South Africa issued a diplomatic statement to say, Iran government, please allow peaceful protesters. Iran has produced evidence to say some of those so-called protesters against the government, they want regime change and they are carrying live ammunition. They are having guns. Mm. That cannot be a peaceful protest. When you protest with a gun, there's nothing peaceful. Mm. And then you shoot at the guards and all that. The government will retaliate.
And chances are they were planted or provided by someone.
Yes. Mm. I mean, we know. They've done it in Libya. They've done it in Iraq. They've done it now in Venezuela. And now Iran is saying, not in my house. And America has pronounced that they want to go and capture the spiritual leader of Iran, Khomeini.
Mm.
Is it Ayatollah Khomeini? They want to capture him like captured Maduro. President Trump has stood up and said, Khomeini is next and we will go there and we'll get him.
Mm.
Now what they do is they cause instability in the country so that when the government is focusing on instability, they can go and do their job. But also, the reason they are causing instability, they want to say, to justify going into Iran or bombing Iran, they want to say to the world, you see, Iran is killing their people. Mm. We can't let them kill innocent civilians. We are going to save those civilians. If the people of Iran can fall into that trap, they'll be stupid.
Have they not been here before?
They've tried.
Where there was a regime change.
They've tried. They've bombed them several times, but Iran has reacted. They've managed to defend their country very well. And I think this is where South Africa, you know, we are delaying. We are too soft. We are diplomatic. We are politicking, but I'm very proud that my country has taken a stance against all countries, whether it's China, whether it's India. You understand? We have a situation where India is busy fighting with Pakistan for territorial war. Everywhere it's war, and we are coming and saying, let's use diplomacy, let's not go into a war. Now we are being threatened for talking to our friends that we have diplomatic relations with. We are being threatened to say we are in a romance with the Islamic Republic of Iran. But we are also in talks with the Americans who are equally, they've just abducted the president and his wife, who's not a politician. You see some of those things. And for me, America broke all international laws. They don't care.
You know what was the weirdest thing to see?
Mm-hmm.
The nations who lamented the fact that international law does not allow for you to carry on like this.
Mm-hmm.
But the UK have done everything in their power to defend it.
Yes.
And say, until we see the justification, we cannot comment.
Yes. What justification is
sad. It's
sick. It's not sad, it's sick.
And in fact, you know, in a sick kind of way, a part of me hopes he goes into Greenland. Because if ever NATO needed a litmus test, it's this. Because an attack on one NATO country is an attack on the entire NATO.
America is a member of NATO. They're leading.
Hence, I'm saying that this is NATO's ultimate litmus test.
Before you came to the studio, Trevor was saying it's going to happen. It won't happen. America will not go to Greenland. They will not. They are not that stupid.
I think he will.
You think?
I think he will because Hartz isn't. I think because he's unhinged.
Let me tell you.
And has no ability to reason like a normal human being. I think he will do it. The fact that he has an ability to thumbsuck a lie about events that never happened.
Yes, yes.
On TV, to his people, who have video footage of what actually happened.
Yeah.
For me, says, this person is unhinged. And Habana Kelelo.
Let me tell you.
Or the ability to reason.
Should the Trump administration go and occupy Greenland?
Mm.
I'll tell you now, I'll bet with my last cent, NATO will not respond. The Europeans will not do anything.
But the French are already there with the naval presence in Greenland.
Look, I wish Trump goes and wipe the French out there and see if Europe will react. It will not happen, French. It will not. This, you are sitting with a bunch of psychos and sick people.
Mm.
All of them, not only Trump, they are the same. Mm. He's just a little bit worse, or he's more brave to do it. What Trump is doing, France is doing in North Africa. France is doing it, you know, and they are doing it in silence. Trump is doing it with making noise. Yes, now he's going to one of the NATO member states. And by the way, the military of Denmark is also a very good and big military.
Mm.
They are capable of defending themselves if they got the support of NATO. I'm saying Trump won't do that, but in your words, if he does it, NATO or Europe will not react. It will not. It will not.
I'm curious
what
to
will
see.
They do? Are they going to attack the American soldiers and jets and naval ships?
I'm curious to see what the UK is going to do. Whose side they're going to take?
Well, not only UK, Germany, UK, France, the Scandinavian countries, all of them. That's their neighbor.
Absolutely.
And as I said, that's the immediate direct
neighbor. In fact, they're there by ground zero.
Yeah, exactly. And who else is big? Leave China and Russia out of this. You know what? Let the West countries deal with themselves.
Sure.
They created the monster in the world. They've been using the might of their money, superpower status, and military to misrule and upset the world. Let them, I don't like war. But if to get to peace, there must be a war, let the West kill themselves and each other. It may impact and affect us.
It will.
It's okay. As long as we are not part of that, we must be collateral, casualties. But I put it down. No country in Europe will ever attack the United States of America. It will not happen.
Mm.
I was saying to friends this year, they're like, Butsang, you are nuts. You are crazy. I was saying to them, the way I'm so upset with the NATO and the West, can't one of them one day just do a mistake and press that button and one nuke it's released to another one so that the other one must retaliate? And somebody was saying to me, I put on, it will never happen because you need six or five people to can put the codes. I said, except in North Korea.
Mm.
That little young boy, can't you make a mistake to start chaos? Then we can have peace. Get rid of the people like Donald Trump, Netanyahu in this world, the world will have peace. Mm. If I'm sitting at home with my wife, dogs, and family, and my neighbor decides, but you know what, you're not taking care of your wife and the dogs, ungena happy.
Mm.
You understand? Who is my neighbor to tell me I'm not taking care of my dogs and my kids? Who is he?
Mm.
If I'm not taking care of them, don't fight with me.
I'm a concerned world citizen.
No, but in this instance, what is the concern of, Trump lied to us, for example, to say Maduro is a drug lord, he's not treating his people very well, and all those. It's an economic war.
And many could argue he's not treating his people very well. The fact that you have military veterans who are homeless and starving. If you look at his approval rating, it's probably the lowest it's been in a very long time.
Yes.
I think the last time his approval rating like this was probably Nixon.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Someone else could argue that he's not treating his people well. But you don't see people trying to interfere and say, if you don't treat your people well, if you don't give people medical aid and health care and look after your veterans who are coming into your country.
America is one of the worst deaths in the world. And I can tell you that Americans are not being treated well by the president they elected, but they're okay.
Mm.
They deserve Donald Trump. They deserve what is going on. And let me tell you, economically, I don't think it will lead to a war, seriously speaking. But what is going to happen? The world is going to suffer for quite a few years, even after Trump leaves office. If he doesn't extend his term and change the constitution, the world is going to suffer because the world did not prepare for the West. They knew the West was coming. But the United States of America, the people of the USA are going to suffer permanently for a very long time. Mm. For many years after Trump has left the office and probably died, the Americans are going to pay a big price economically. They when they were busy preparing for a war, which is the economy is dependent on the military, when they were busy doing that, because if they don't start the war, they've invested trillions, if not zillions of dollars into the military. Now they don't have money. They are cash strapped. Their resources are getting depleted, and they are in debt.
Mm.
Now, the only thing they can do is to use the might of that military to again steal oil somewhere, capture other countries so that they can extract their resources. They may take the Congo in order to fund the U.S. debt. That's the only way they can go out. And the world is going to sit and watch. The other superpowers or the other nuclear countries are going to say, as long as they don't come to us, they can take our neighbors next door. And as long as they can come to us. I mean, a week before our last episode, we spoke on our last episode that fresh, when we come back, go and relook at that episode. When we come back in January, Trump would have taken Maduro.
Sure.
3 days after we closed down, Trump took Maduro.
Speaking of closing down, we're out of time.
Thank you, my brother.
Sorry, Trevor. Trevor is our videographer, and I know he needs to run.
Oh,
so we need to run.
Okay.
Where do we find you on social media?
Still the same, botsangm@gmail.com and 083-884-7787 on WhatsApp and at botsangm on all social media handles and on Radio 938 FM Monday mornings after 8 and Thursday mornings.
And if you want to carry on with this conversation, please, by all means, do that. Go to the comment section and share your views. You know, we might be turning off the cameras, but this conversation must continue. And there'll be more of this in exactly a week, because we're within a movie. We are all extras in this movie. And unfortunately, whether or not you care, it will affect you. So thank you for tuning in. 938. Thanks for tuning in to Wow What a Week, hashtag Politrix with Fresh and Botsang. Coming to you from Discover TV, Let Them Be Your Stage. It's an incredible spot. If you're shooting a podcast, you want to do a DJ mix, a music video, they will sort you out. The editing suite is also incredible. So look for Discover TV. Shout out to Kelezo Modisekeng, our executive producer, Trevor and his crew at Pezulu Works, and most importantly to you. Thank you for tuning in. We are back again in exactly a week. Till then, have a wow week in spite of yourselves. We are out of here.